welcome to our work session this December 16th, 2024. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle. Not yet. Mr. Ringstad.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Mayor Pruse.
I am here. I'd like to welcome Representative Dibert, Representative, Stapp, Senator-elect Mike Cronk. Welcome. Hopefully, more of your legislative brethren show up, but if not, honored to have you. Thank you for being here. Well, talk about getting in late from North Pole. You know, here a guy drives in all the way from Toke, and he beats the guy from North Pole. I would never have suspected such an issue with our wonderful representative, Mike Prox. So, but thank you for being here. And also, we have our Uri Morgan here, who is our lobbyist, and appreciate him being here. So we have our annual list of items to meet with you and go through with you on our legislative priorities of 2025. And the first one is concern about the PER, the PERS rate of 22% being charged to municipalities. You know, I look at that, and that was from Mr. Cleworth. And Mr. Cleworth, do you want to address this one, please, for us?
First, thank you all for coming. I know that you go to many meetings with a lot of people and hear a lot of things, and taking your time is important to us. This has been on our list before. The DB program is a program that inherently is a gamble, and you are going to promise a retiree a set amount of money for the rest of their life, regardless of your ability in the fund to earn it. If you come up short, the Constitution forces you as representatives to come up with a balance. That's why every year right now you're putting in hundreds of millions of dollars off legacy debt for the PERS, for the old DB program. We also are paying into it. On page two there, I'm just going to read you the first part of here. It says the majority of the 22% we are mandated to pay goes to retire the legacy debt of the original DB retirement plan. From 2008 to 2023, all PERS employers, the state municipalities, have paid an additional $7.7 billion toward the unfunded liability. Locally, we, in the Fairbanks North Star Borough and North Pole, have paid $132.2 million for their share of the liability. That is a major hit on the people of this area here, and that's because of the lack of oversight of the original DB program. I know you're looking at a way, you say, a problem of retention, but there are many ways, I think, to deal with that short of going back into another DB program. And I won't get into all that here, but if you do continue on the path of a DB program, there are two fundamental flaws that this Senate bill that you have in front of you maintains within it. One is the fact that it is still including overtime and computing a high 5 years of employees' base rate. Adding overtime means that somebody can game the system, and that's what happened the last time. When we first heard of this new plan, I assumed that that would be taken out, but it was left in. That should not be there, and that's going to give you, I would promise you, will give you headaches down the road. Second, the discount rate that's being discussed is 7.25%. That's an aggressive rate. You have to earn that on average every year of this program. Regardless if you're in recession, depression, or whatever, you have to get this on average. By comparison, Kentucky's DB program is 5.25%. That's 2 percentage points lower than what the state is looking at right now. For you to get that, you would have to be very aggressive with your investment portfolio, and with aggressivity comes risk. So I would just, we're concerned mainly if you do go down that path and you do create debt, we don't want to see this 22% grow because we're not in charge of it. We just send you a check and we're expecting, you know, Juno to do its due diligence and not put this thing into debt. So we are very, 22% we have now, we could pay Social Security and a 401k and leave money on the table for 22 cents on the dollar. That's a very high rate. So we're just sharing with you our concerns about what we see happening. And I know some of the council members probably disagree with me on that too. So thank you.
Any comments from our legislative representatives? Mr. Hayes, thank you for being here. Mrs. Carrick, Representative Carrick, thank you for being here. Council Member Sprinkle, thank you. You know, when you walk in with a bunch of Christmas presents for myself and no one else, you can arrive a little bit late. Okay. Any discussion from, yes, Mr. Staff, Representative Staff.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pruse, and I do believe Rep. Prox has a question too. So my question for Council Member Cleworth. This section I read, it says, you request that all municipalities be exempt from paying off any new debt created by this plan. So to me, actually explain that, what that means to me. Because again, the employees, if you know, if you were to recreate a new defined benefit plan, all public employees, ideally, that's what the bill does, is covers them, including city employees. So what does that mean? You mean contribution rate higher than your existing 22%?
The 22 cents right now was agreed on 20 years ago, roughly, on the municipalities. It's a very high rate, but that was what they came up with to try and retire the debt. It won't be retired until 2039, as we know. So we're gonna keep paying for a long time to come on the original plan. Our concern here is that if this goes into the red, which I believe it will, if it is engaged, that we are going to be hit with a higher rate if you pass it on. You don't have to. And what we're saying, we hope you don't. We hope you indemnify us from going into yet another DB program.
Thank you.
Mr. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. The City of Fairbanks has taken upon itself to do a couple of things to address the recruitment retention problem.
Yes.
Correct? If we could get kind of a report on that, that would help. Because we...
When I come down to Juneau in February, I'll sit with you and I'll give you a report on how it's working.
Right.
And what we've done.
Yep. We do have a statewide retention recruitment problem. There's all kinds of ways to skin a cat, and it's just a matter of doing the arithmetic and taking a guess on which is the best way. So we need different ideas other than just saying no.
Yeah. I'll give a updated report to the Interior Legislature. Ms. Therrien.
Thank you for coming. I just got back from AML and heard from the speaker and the Senate president, and they said that they were going to be working on this problem aggressively this year. And I hope that something can be done to work so that we can recruit and retain. Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead.
Just a couple of comments. You know, we talk about defined benefits, and quite frankly, I don't have a problem with defined benefits. Depends how you define them, right? I could say you're here, okay, you get $20 a month the rest of your life, and it's defined, right? So the devil's in the details on this one. And from a city point of view, I think kind of where Jerry's been going with this thing is we just kind of take whatever lumps we get, without much saying how we do it, and we just gotta figure out where to come up with the money when it really wasn't our expenditure. With this legacy debt is a big hit for all of us, all the municipalities in the state. I don't think we're any much different than anybody else, but I don't know how you're gonna get the municipalities to come up with any more if we gotta do that 8 years from now or 10 years from now. It's gonna be a big problem.
Okay. Mr. Cleworth.
Just one other thing.
Then we'll move on. We got a list here. So
Tier 4 has been criticized heavily. I'm self-employed. I've got to pay both the employee and the employer share of Social Security tax. That's a heavy hit every year. I would love to have your Tier 4. I'm just going to say that, rather than what I'm paying right now. But I don't have the right to do that. I have to pay Social Security. Thank you.
Okay. Item two is mitigate municipalities' liability regarding PFAS and PFO groundwater contamination and fund remediation efforts. Groundwater contamination. So, again, this has been on our list for a while. You've worked on it in the past. Really appreciate that. And I've been involved in that. And if you can continue that, we don't know what the EPA is going to do on their levels of contamination, if they change that. Please keep an eye on it. Please operate through this. I'm sure you're going to be seeing more legislation on this. But you have to remember, the city of Fairbanks, we didn't do it. We had a containment center set up. It worked perfectly. And we had all the regional training centers come over, and in their exuberance, they sprayed foam outside of the contamination, the containment center. And this was a item that the EPA had approved in the 70s. And so here we are, the city of Fairbanks, with a very large plume. And so far, we've probably spent close to $6 million on remediation and cleanup, bringing water to other locations so they didn't have contaminated drinking water. We've been the city of Fairbanks has been very aggressive on that, and we still will be. But we are looking at you to be the shield, sort of, if the EPA wants to move the threshold down a ways. That's where we need your help. We take our responsibilities for safe drinking water very seriously. Ms. Sprinkle.
Mayor, can you share with our colleagues what the groundwater contamination is doing to the Airport Way project? Because it's affecting everybody in that project. Well, to the numbers, I don't think they know what they're.
Are you talking which one? are you talking about the Cowell Street intersection there, or
no, the right? Or all well, of them? No, not that one, but the one behind the dry clean Coin King.
Oh, that one. Well, that's not PFAS. That's contamination from yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that's okay. a whole different issue.
All right, and, never mind then.
You know, the thing about Fairbanks is you don't want to strike a match and drop it on the ground. You might have an issue.
Mayor?
Yes.
Could I say something in support of what you were saying?
You know, you were only on the city council for 8 years and 8 months, so you know something? You can say whatever you want, Ms. Rogers, and welcome back. And pull up a chair and say it into the microphone, please.
I just want to be able to support some of the things that you said there regarding the PFAS in the beginning. You and I both worked on that together.
Yes.
And it is a credit to the city of Fairbanks that a really, really tough situation, which was expensive and mind-boggling and everything else, was handled in a way that talked about people first and families and pure conditions for baby bottles and all sorts of things that were brought to us by people in the community. And working together in order to go forward in the safest way possible, however, not so much in the way that attracted a whole lot of support from other entities. We were very lonely in the beginning, as I recall. But we toughed it out, and we have accomplished a great deal. And it's one of those things that it doesn't go away, and it does get larger, and it is still with us. And this city is deserving of the support that is being requested about anything that has to do with PFAS, because we didn't neglect our duties in the beginning, and we've been working on it in a very responsible way ever since. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it, Ms. Rogers. And working with you, myself, and the late Mike Meeks, we put that together, and that was a lot of work. And we nailed it. We really did. So really appreciated working with you on that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Next up, I'd like to have our chief of police come up on item number 3. Allow tier 1, 2, and 3 PERS retirees to continue to collect retirement if they return to work to fill critical shortages under tier 4. And this is something that will help the Fairbanks Police Department directly. Chief, do you want to go through it with our representatives?
Sure. And I don't think it's just the police department that will benefit from this. I think we've talked about it probably the last 2 or 3 years. There really hasn't been any movement on it. Last year, I talked with the governor's office, and they were really holding out for the defined benefit plan. And I guess my take on it is we can't wait for the defined benefit plan to come. We've been working on that for the last 12 years, and we need a solution now. I'll give you a prime example. Right now, I have 2 part-time employees that are retired FPD officers that I can't bring back full-time because that would violate their PERS retirement. So what I'm proposing is you allow the Tier 1, 2, and 3 employees, the guys that have retired, guys and gals that have retired, allow them to come back into PERS under the Tier 4 system, which is what they're essentially doing anyway when they take another job. They're just putting into a 401k somewhere else. So you still have those employees paying the pot of money for the Tier 1, 2, and 3 guys, but they're able to come back, work full-time, fill in the gaps with the experience that we previously had, and give us a little bit of a gap to be able to train up new guys and get them in place and alleviate some of the stress that we have with the low numbers, the low staffing numbers. Also, you have employees that are police officers, firefighters, all these other job positions that can't go back and do any other state job because they're PERS employees, right? So if I have an officer that wants to go and drive grader for DOT, he can't do it because if he goes back into a full-time PERS position, he has to step out of his retirement. So there's a whole group of employees that have worked for the state or municipalities that we know are good employees because they worked at least 20 or 30 years, depending on, you know, how long they were in the system, and we're excluding them from, you know, being employed anywhere else with that PERS system. So I think it's a win-win for everybody. You know, it's not like 20 years ago when I had one position open and 500 people lined up for that one position. You know, I have 8 positions open right now, 9 positions as of yesterday. And, you know, I'm lucky if I get 4 or 5 applicants a month, which then we have to go through and make sure they're qualified and this and that. So it'd be much easier to be able to bring back employees that have retired that we know and can put them on the payroll for a little while and help train up some of these younger guys.
Senator and representatives, any questions for the chief on this one? Senator-elect.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Is this just a simple legislation issue?
I believe it's just a rule change in PERS. I don't know.
Would it be statute or would it be would it be under statute? Okay,
thank you.
Okay. Mr. Hayes, you had your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I'm just curious, is this something that would not allow the police department, fire, whoever, to just contract these folks? Mm-hmm.
That's a PERS regulation as well.
PERS regulation. Thank you.
Mr. Representative Stapp.
So I have a question. So this is definitely something that I'm interested trying to work through here. Yeah, it's a little complicated. So if you bring an employee back under a different retirement system and they agree to that, the state constitution says you can't diminish a benefit, right? So what would stop that employee from changing their mind and saying they want to accrue more time in tier two rather than tier four?
You know, that's a good question, Representative Stappen. I hope you look into that and see if that would be the case.
Well, I did, but and that's why I posed the question, right? So not saying that anyone would do that, but I mean, I think sure. The issue is you couldn't stop them from doing that in the event that they did want to do that, if that made sense.
I think maybe the issue might be is you don't stop them from receiving their benefits under tier two or three, but you allow them to accrue benefits under tier four, and they can still at the same time receive their benefits under tier two or three. Maybe that's the way we should look at it. Okay. Thank you, Chief. Appreciate it. Mr. Ringstead.
Just a comment. Chief said he's got 8 or 9 openings. He's got a total staff of 47 positions.
39 sworn.
39, is that what we're at? A quarter of his positions are empty. So getting people, I mean, you're getting to the critical point here. That like, and his issue of we can't wait. It's not like he needs 9 out of 100. He needs 9 out of 40, right?
Okay. Item number 4 is maintain SART funding to help communities meet testing liabilities. We get reimbursements on that every year. We appreciate that. You know, we have 102 sources of income, the city of Fairbanks, and this is one of them, and it's an important one. You know, we try and maintain as many funding sources as we can so you don't have one item such as real estate taxes that provide 85 to 90% of our revenue. And again, this is something the legislature and the governor reviews, and if anything we can get to maintain it is good, because this is an item of need for reimbursement on a bad situation. So anyway, Mr. Representative Prox.
What does SART stand for?
Chief of Staff, would you please tell them what that is?
It's the sexual assault response team. Yeah, it's the kids basically that we send over to FMH, and then they have to process, and then we pay for that. And with Fairbanks being a hub community, we get quite a few of those a year.
And with Fairbanks having the largest police presence, we have that activity a lot, so. Okay.
Mayor, sorry to keep, but this is something.
Ms. Rogers, why don't you pull up and talk about item number 4?
The SART testing circumstances are something that for years I've been speaking to, and it was so behind, and it's such a critical situation in someone's life. And then the details are sitting on a shelf someplace. And so somehow or another, when I was first confronted with our list of priorities way back in 2016, this seemed to be like, it just stood out. And as something that was total neglect if we didn't all keep it right up there in front and focused on and working upon. And so I urge all of you to support and help us make sure that those tests processed.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rogers. Appreciate it. Okay. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. What is his name? Mayor Cruz. He's got a name tag.
Unless we're on the radio together.
No, I know. Yeah, right. So we did do something about that in the last year or two. Has something mm-hmm. gotten better or worse over the last couple of years?
It's maintained. It's maintained. It's gotten better, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
And but that's with a lot of oversight by us and discussions with the governor's office and then our legislative body. It's gotten better. And we want to keep it that way because it's sadly, it's an activity that we have to perform.
Yep.
And it's never a good one. So.
Nope. But it's just a funding issue, not a
legislation. Yeah, it's a funding issue. Okay. That's all it is.
Okay, number five, ensure the University of Alaska in Fairbanks is a priority for the university operational and capital funding. And I'm going to hand this one off to Councilman Ringstead.
I don't think we really need to tell you much about this one. You know, it's obviously a priority for our community. One of my little pet peeves in this thing has always been that we argue and fight for our university, but it's not just UAF. It's statewide, and there's a continual fight that you probably have seen already, that there are a number of our colleagues that would like to have all these jobs just move down to Anchorage or someplace else. So this continual fight, we want to put it out there and say, we don't want our jobs getting moved to Anchorage. If they aren't able to move the campus down there, they're just taking jobs. So either way, we want to push and support you in your push for continuing the somewhat independence and the stability of the Fairbanks Interior University. Nothing new, really, in that for you. But if we don't keep it on the list, I think they might think we don't care.
Mr. Marnie.
Well, I was surprised. I heard a rumor that Pat Pitney had moved to Anchorage. Is that true?
I haven't heard the rumor.
I could call her and we could ask.
Okay. Anyway, yes, Ms. Representative Carrick.
Oh, there we go. I mean, I'll just add to that and say that one of the things that I've tried to really elevate with other members of the legislature is the fact that UA statewide is all located at the Butcherovich building on campus. It's supposed to be. But a lot of it still is, you know, the centralized hub for Canvas, where many of our classes are exclusively operating from, is on the Butcherovich building on our UAF campus. And we have very significant capital budget needs at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So I would encourage the city to also take that deferred maintenance need up as a critical issue for Fairbanks. And that's impacting statewide as well.
Thank you. Okay, number six, allocate funding to prioritize the development and expansion of Crisis Bureau Health System in the state of Alaska. And that's Crisis Now. We're looking at having a Crisis Now Center here in Fairbanks. The process, it's coming together, hopefully. But we're sort of the test case of it. And we're finding out that Juneau does well with it. We do well with it. And it's something to look at on a statewide basis. You know, the more you invest in that, the more it opens up our police and our fire department of responding to other items. So, what's that, Mr. Ringson? Crisis Now is a rapid response team that when a person is having a mental aspect that could be dangerous for him or the public, the Crisis Now team responds within 20 minutes. And what we're going to be doing is putting together a center for them to house them. Where they take them now is basically sadly a hallway in the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. That's what they get. And so we're looking at a facility. Brenda is of the Crisis Now. She's really done incredible things, and she's looking at having a space leased out and then remodeled through funding, not of our own, not of state per se, but of different funding mechanisms to do that. And our thought is, you should look at that as a model throughout the state, if you can. So. Is she here? I can't even see her. Oh, there? Oh, she's okay. Brenda, come on up. I was looking for you. I couldn't see you. Thank you, Ms. Rogers. This is our rock star.
Well, I'm just so proud of the mayor for doing so well, you know. what you said, we want to make sure that people have appropriate response. Our mobile crisis team has been going for 3 years, and we'd like to see, you know, other teams across the state, and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority needs, you know, help from the state to start helping with some of that funding and supporting Medicaid rates being changed to support those services. And then just really thank you for your support for the crisis stabilization. I think I met with all of you over the last year, and Alaska Behavioral Health has agreed to work in that space here in the interior, so we should have a space that can serve that whole region, and people shouldn't have to be transported out of Anchorage or out of state when they're in behavioral health crisis. So that should save the state a significant amount of money. So we're excited about that, and thank you for your support.
Any questions for, yes, Ms. Representative Carrick.
Jeez. I know we discussed this in Juneau, and I know that they're not beds, they're recliners. Mm-hmm. So can you just remind us what the recliner space is, the number of people that can be served in any one night by crisis now?
So the provider could decide on how many recliners that they wanted to do. And so that will be up to Alaska Behavioral Health. But I've seen models that typically go up to 16. And that can be the recliner, and that's up to 23 hours. It doesn't have to be 23 hours. And then you have a separate license to run short-term or crisis residential services, and Medicaid will pay for that up to 7 days. And that's actually a bed. And they can be, they're working on the licensing requirements for it now. They put them out to public comment, and they haven't returned back with the finalized version.
Brenda actually made me go down and look at one of these facilities in Phoenix. She carries a lot of weight in this building. I call her part of the West Wing. It's a group of very exceptional people that are my boss. So, and if you look at this, this isn't a benefit to Fairbanks. This is a benefit to the state of Alaska. We want you to start taking a look at, because it works here because of her. Thank you, Brenda. Appreciate it. Number seven, established legislation. I'm sorry. Oh. Mr. Representative Prox.
Yes, two things. Is this in, this is in addition to...
Brenda, why don't you take a seat again?
Okay, great. This is in addition to the facility that's down between 2nd and 3rd. On Cushman? Can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, so we are looking for an entity that can provide behavioral health treatment. And while there's lots of organizations that can provide kind of a certain aspect, maybe they're really good at convincing someone to go to treatment, or they can give out, you know, some Narcan to people, and they do all these separate things. I think what we desperately need is somewhere that law enforcement and paramedics can take someone and leave because the job will get done, and that crisis stabilization center will be able to treat anything within that behavioral health, substance use crisis, and then get them on the pathway to wellness from there.
I'll give you an example. I had Pete Kelly with the Fairbanks Rescue Mission in my office last week, and he came in to thank me for a police officer's response. He found a lady who had been horribly used and abused for many reasons in life lately, who had a very bad addiction, and the police officer didn't want to bring her over to certain locations because it wouldn't have worked. And there was no place for him to bring her. So he brought her over to Pete. And this isn't what Pete does, but Pete said, I'll take care of it. I know what to do with her, know how to handle it, so she will live through the night and hopefully get some help. And that's what he was looking at. When she is up and running with her location, that police officer who was working overtime, who should have been going home, who took the time to this, take this one person and give them help when he didn't have to. And that's what she's going to be setting up. And that's what Pete was saying to me, please get this done and thank the police officer. Just an example of it. So, yes, Representative Prox.
So the other, we talked sort of about the same thing with Tana Chiefs this afternoon, that they want more, specifically, they wanted a mental health technician working with, what do they call it, Region 4. The trooper, Fairbanks troopers. Anyway, same idea, need to get together with Tana Chiefs.
You're assigned.
We would really support any specific tribal response. We have the mobile crisis team that can go out to any 911 call. If the troopers have the ability to have a, you know, a tribal focused mental health technician, I would highly support that. That wouldn't take away from what we're doing. It would just bring more people to help and more people referred to the center.
Okay, thank you, Brenda. We're gonna move on here to number 7. Establish legislation with significant fines and penalties for intentionally exposing first responders and medical personnel to bodily fluids. Spitting, urine, things like that. That happens to our people. And don't know what's on the statutes now for crimes, but if you could take a look at that and see what you can do, I'd greatly appreciate that. It's something our first responders deal with on a daily basis. And we're looking for response to when that happens. That's significant. Okay. Number 8, update Alaska Statute 40.25.110 to allow fees to be applied to any video copying and or editing requirement for a public records request. Chief, half of this is yours. Explain what this is about.
So under the records request, the way it currently reads, basically, if we have an incident, let's say it was an hour-long incident and I had 7 officers that responded, there's 7 different body camera videos, 7 car camera videos, and by statute, a video is just a document. So in order for us to do the redaction on it, it's very labor-intensive. It takes about 4 to 5 minutes per minute of video to do the redaction. So if you had 7 videos that were an hour long a piece, you're looking at quite a bit of time. I have one evidence custodian that pretty much does nothing but video redaction at the current time. And there's really nothing to deter people from asking for all the video that we have. So this is just to help cover the costs of producing those videos, right? So we have to redact everything. We have to block out driver's licenses, phone numbers. So it's not just, you know, copying a video and turning it over. It's blacking out people's faces, muting audio, all of that sort of thing. And so we're just looking at an update to the legislation to include the video.
Any questions for the chief? Mr. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering, I would guess off the top of my head that most of the people requesting this are defendants, or is there other people involved?
Oh, no. There's a very large pool of individuals making social media posts now, whether it's on YouTube, Facebook. It's a stream of money, right? Everybody likes cop shows. In the past, I would say 3 months, I've gotten requests from 6 different production companies to come and do another series of Alaska PD, live PD, any kind of those cop shows. What people have figured out is through the Freedom of Information Act and public records requests, they can get body camera video very easily. So they request body camera video, they splice it, put it onto YouTube, and when it generates enough hits, they get paid. So we're seeing more and more requests for
thousands of hours of video.
Which, under the FOIA laws, we must comply with. Mm. And it's starting to put strain on our budget and our man hours. So we need relief, if we can get it. Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Okay.
Yeah, that was one.
Number nine. Now, here's one for you. Exempt local governments from vehicle registration fees from the state of Alaska. You exempt federal, you exempt state. Share the love. Share the love. Mr. Ringstead.
In my mind, it's probably broader than just saying exempt us from the fees. I mean, we've got, I think they told us we got like 400 vehicles. How much time do you suppose, even if you get rid of the fees, we've still got to have somebody sitting there doing this, right? Why? It's pretty obvious they're a city vehicle, you know? And apparently all the municipalities in the state are doing the same thing. You know the process. It's program receipts, so nobody usually looks at it, right? Budget comes, budget goes, program receipts, don't even ask it. Well, you know, a few years ago, the state, in its wisdom, decided that those of us that have trailers in our yard that don't really need to re-register a trailer every single year and pay the $100. So it's not like we haven't done it before. This is just getting the municipalities and taking away some of the work that really doesn't need to be done. It's pretty obvious. Everybody knows whose vehicle it is. So why create work? Because that's about all we're doing with it right now.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and to Councilman Ringstead. I actually kind of like this idea, and I'll certainly investigate it. My one concern is, though, who is going to stand at the line at the DMV if we do this?
Our city clerk.
That's a joke. City clerk, you wouldn't have to stand at the line of the DMV. Exactly.
She's giving me the I'm going to kill you look. I will designate someone for the city of Fairbanks, believe me. Probably an engineer I'm mad at. Okay, thank you. Number 10, maintain a baseline of $6 million annually in the community assistance program funding. Representative Stapp.
All right. Serious question on this one, Mr. Mayor. Community assistance capitalized at $90 million. One-third of the fund is distributed to the municipalities. That's by statute. So if you want the capitalization to be at $60 million, that basically means we'd only distribute $20 million per year. And I think the way that fund works is it's prioritized in these kind of rural municipalities first.
Representative Stapp, when this was produced, we didn't know those things, but once we agreed to it, our lobbyist saw it and came in and gave me a couple wet fours, yeah, and explained it to me. So
okay.
So we just want you to maintain what you're doing if you can.
Okay. I was just going to say, because it's $60 million, I don't think you get a lot of money. At $90 million, which is the statute, you would actually,
you know, far be it for us not to request what we can get.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
11, allow housing activities under the State of Alaska Community Block Development Block Program. And that's going to coincide with our number 3 capital project, too. Chief of Staff, do you want to handle this one?
Sure, I can do that. So right now, the Community Development Block Grant, that's a grant that, we get every year from HUD. It goes through the state to the municipalities. Right now, the way it's written for the state is it really restricts what the actual intention of the CDBG at the federal level is. So at the federal level, the primary focus is on housing for the Community Development Block Grant. But the state has put in some restrictions that kind of prevent that from happening. The CDBG grant is designed for principally benefit the persons of lower moderate income. The state does agree with that. It's also at the federal level allowed to be used to prevent or eliminate blight. The state does not allow that. And it's also allowed to be used for other community development needs at the federal level. The state does not allow that. And then the big kicker is this is supposed to be a housing grant, and it is not allowed to be used for housing. in the CDBG book, it's a housing activities. It says that the state of Alaska CDBG program does not target housing activities, although they are eligible under CDBG guidelines. And basically what that means is that no matter what the project is, if it's housing related, it is denied. And that becomes a real barrier for a lot of our nonprofits and a lot of our developers that are looking to do some housing activities with the CDBG.
If you take a look, you know, I flew down and met with Commissioner Sandy and haven't heard anything back, don't know where it's gone. But we want to take this money here and invest it into the Moore Street senior housing that the governor vetoed last year, funding for it that was available. And we want to do that for that program. The seniors that live there in the city limits of Fairbanks get the state of Alaska for a HUD housing program. It's regulation. It's regulation that needs to be changed on this. It's not statute. It's regulation that needs to be changed. So if someone could head that, that'd be great. I don't know if it's easily done, but it can be done. And it's not a cost to you. It's letting us do what we can do with the funds that we are granted through HUD that are passed through to the state of Alaska. That's what we're asking you. Thank you. Okay. Mr. Representative Prox.
Thank you. Have you talked to AML or other municipalities about this?
No.
Okay.
Okay. But when I'm down there in Juneau with the AML meeting, I will be bringing that up. Good idea. Thank you, sir. 12, adjust legislation around child abandonment laws to allow for baby boxes. And that is a very, very important one by Council Member Lonnie Marney. Mr. Marney.
Well, I did some door knocking today on most of your offices and chatted with your staff. And then I got a call this afternoon that basically told me that we were on the one-yard line and there would be a touchdown scored this summer during the session. So I appreciate, sounds like it's been in the works for quite a while, and I thank each and every one of you for this. Basically, it gets the door open, we can decide how we're gonna fund it and where we're gonna place it. So thank you.
We're going to go with Dawson Mann first online.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Dawson.
All right, perfect. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Assembly members. I just wanted to say Dawson Mann from Senator Meyer's office here. We've been working on a baby box bill with Representative Tomaszewski's office, and we actually just got another draft of that bill sent off about an hour ago with some edits we received from some stakeholders. So we're looking to have another draft back soon for pre-file. And if anybody has any questions afterwards, I'd be happy to get back in touch with them about sort of some of the changes we're making and how we try to move forward on that.
Thank you very much, Dawson. Greatly appreciate it. Ms. Rogers, will you please come up here? And also, I'd like to thank Representative Kevin McCabe for listening in on our Interior Delegation wants and needs.
I just wanted to add my thoughts on this, and Lonnie and I have been talking about this for quite some time. We've both been receiving letters from many, many people throughout the region and the areas around Fairbanks, particularly the small towns just outside of Fairbanks, and that we're a hub that would be able to serve not just those in our borough, but Nenana, Healy, Fort Greeley, and those places. A lot of persons in our interior region are very, very seriously concerned about this issue and are seeking for us to be the leaders so that their smaller communities can also benefit by this. And thank you, Martin.
Thank you very much. Ms. Therrien.
Yes, when I was at AML this past week, the city manager and the police chief for Valdez was very interested in this as well, and so I think you could get some support from that area as well, and I'm really looking forward to getting this bill passed.
Thank you. Item number 12, 13 on our list, rather, is Fund Emergency Services Patrol in Fairbanks. Chief of Staff Sanders, you want to handle that one?
So the Emergency Service Patrol, this is actually something Ms. Therrien had put in there, but the Emergency Service Patrol is something that we do here in Fairbanks to help the folks that are suffering from chronic inebriation. What we used to do is a security company, a Securitas, used to do this function for us. Basically, they would go pick up the folks and take them to any number of locations, the sobering center, FCC, detox, all these different places. And what that does is it frees up our police officers from having to do it. If the person is inebriated to the point where they're passing out, then our paramedics still have to go pick them up. But ESP is a great program when it's up and going. We went out to RFP. We only had one company that sent us a proposal, and that proposal was not something that we could afford for the amount of time that they were going to do it.
Thank you, Chief. Representative Prox.
Thank you, Mayor Pruse. Does this fit somehow into the Crisis Now program?
I would say definitely. They're parallel programs. So you wouldn't necessarily want your mobile crisis team doing ESP work, but there'll be times when the ESP and mobile crisis team will be serving the same folks.
Ms. Therrien.
Yes, I was speaking with someone from TCC, and they were providing $10,000 to help support this program, and I think it would be a good partner if we can ever get the money to do this.
Okay. Chief, you want to come up here? We're going to go through the three capital priorities, and you're on the first two. Number one, design and establish an Interior Alaska Regional Emergency Vehicle Operation Course Track. Describe what that would be, Chief.
Thank you, sir. It's basically a driving track for all of our emergency vehicles. It doesn't necessarily have to be police cars, but can also be used for ambulances, fire trucks, any of those. Obviously, driving fast with lights and sirens is one of the highest liability situations that we have, and we do it on a daily basis. So being able to provide adequate training for our officers is essential. We currently don't have a place to do the high-speed portion of the EVOC training that we do. We are able to get the low speed driving in, but high speed has always been at the airport or Air Force Base, Army Base used to allow us to do it on portions of the runway. That's really dried up in the last little bit, and the airport, that's hit or miss as well. We'll set up a date at the airport, and they give us a section of the kind of the jet parking off to the side, and if they have a last minute plane that comes in that needs to be parked there, then we lose our training, and it's just not it's not a good situation. So we need someplace in town that all the local agencies can train on.
So, in town or in the interior?
Correct. Yes, I mean in the interior. We have five law enforcement agencies just in the Fairbanks area, not including all the different fire agencies. So this is also something that could be used for, our public works department. We can offer, our driver trainers can offer training classes for our public works employees, DOT, we can even go as far as offering, teen driver classes, civilian classes, things of that nature as well.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Chief. Can you elaborate a little bit about why some of the other training areas that you've used previously are drying up? You mentioned the base, for example, and is mm-hmm. that due to an increase in base operations in general, or?
It's really, in the past, it's been the base commanders that have allowed it, and basically they're responsible for anything that happens there. So if one of our vehicles takes a rock onto the runway and it gets sucked up into a jet engine, you know, the base commander's on the hook for it. And so we've just seen a lot less availability for that. So they just have closed that down. And then really since COVID, a lot of the operations that we used to do on the base, whether it's, you know, working out at the facilities there, those types of things have been reduced or shut down.
Okay. Number two, Chief, provide funding for ALMR radios required by State of Alaska system upgrade. Explain that process.
Sure. So we're currently going through another upgrade, the ALMR system is going through another upgrade. The digital radio system is something that the state mandates that we're on. The radios that we currently have, about half of them don't meet the specifications to go to the new update, which means that we have to purchase all new radios for our vehicles and for our portables in order to operate on the new upgraded system. So that's what we're looking at. Not just police, but also fire and EMS as well.
Thank you, Chief, appreciate it. And last item, it's in conjunction with item number 11, support funding for Moore Street Seniors Incorporated to upgrade Moore Street Senior Apartments. If we can change the regulation on the Alaska Community Development Block Grant, we can do that. It's a win-win. You're dealing with facilities built in the 80s. Windows, exterior siding is not the best anymore. The income that is derived there is from what their retirement income is, which is quite low. So some people get to spend $150 for an apartment, things like that. Yet in the interior, our utility costs go up and things like that. So that takes precedence over remodels and repairs at times, just keeping the lights on. So anything we can do on this would be greatly appreciated. That's our list. And what I'd like to point out to you is most of this list is a large portion is non-monetary. We purposely did that. Every day I look at what the price of oil is, and was it this morning? Will $66? And your budget's at what, 72? And so I look at this and say, what can our interior legislators do in a non-monetary way that directly benefits the city of Fairbanks? And the vast majorities are that way. And we sit down, the city council and I, we go through this and we debate it, we wordsmith it, and we bring it to you. And we appreciate your time and effort. And I'd also like to say thank you to staffers that also came here from the different offices. You know, nothing happens without you guys. And appreciate you, I really do. And you're all very good staffers. So anyway, yes, Ms. Therrien.
Just to let you know that Mr. Ringstad and I are on the legislative committee with the mayor, and we'll be coming down to Juneau to talk to you. But in the early part, if you need a resolution or some letters of support for any of the work that you're doing on our list, please get in touch with us, and we'll be glad to do that and work with other municipalities if possible. But don't forget to call us or email us.
Again, thanks to all of you, and we're going to adjourn now. Thank you.